Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to talk about a few things that you may consider doing in your soybeans this year. And yes, soybean acreage in the United States may be down a little bit, but you know what? I think there's still a tremendous amount of potential and maybe even more potential because soybean acreage could be down. But I was talking to some farmers in Canada yesterday who were talking about soybeans just a little bit as well. I don't know what's going to happen with acreage. I don't care whether you live in the United States or Canada, wherever you live, you're shooting for higher yields if you are raising soybeans or any crop. So we're going to talk about that as we go throughout the day. We'd love to take your phone call as well. If you want to call in, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today, and we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag shortly. But Darren, what do you think on soybeans? What are some of the first things that pop into your head that you would like to see a farmer do?
Well, number one is fertilize. And I think this is the biggest one that I see that the guys just aren't doing a good enough job on soybeans. When we do meetings around the country and we ask, hey, how many of you are fertilizing your soybeans? A lot of hands go up. And then we say, wait a second. How many applied fertility for their corn crop? Now you're going to a soybean rotation, and that's your fertility program. And most of the hands go back up. And we say, okay, how many guys are fertilizing individually here for soybeans? You're just going to fertilize for this year's soybean crop. Not too many hands go up, Brian. And that alarms me because I don't see many people that are pulling soil samples every year. And if you're not doing that, to be gutsy enough to say, well, I'm sure there's plenty of fertilizer left from last year, and I'm sure it's going to be available, and I'm sure my soybean roots that would fit in a pop can are going to find that fertility out there somewhere in the field and maximize yields, I just don't see that happening.
The soybean average on our own farm here has gone up over 30 bushels in the last 15 years. And I'll tell you three of the things that I think are huge for it. Number one is tile. Number two is potassium. And number three is we make multiple foliar applications. The last one of the season, we will do a combination of fungicide, insecticide, and foliar fertilizer. And that application has been really good. I don't know what the year is going to bring. Is this going to be the worst insect year we've ever seen? And don't get me wrong, I'm not spraying insecticide unless we have bugs, but we almost always have bugs. So anyway, all I'm getting at here is I don't know if it's going to be the worst insect year. Is it going to be the worst disease year? Do I really need those foliar nutrients? But all I know is that combination has been great. So tile, potassium, and then the last foliar shot of fungicide, insecticide, foliar fertilizer. Those are probably my top three things.
Well, I think weed control is huge. And our three pre-program for soybeans, where we're using three different effective modes of action pre-emerge to kill most of the resistant weeds out there before they even come out of the ground, that's really key too. So a lot of times we may be looking for a silver bullet, and we just gave you about a half a dozen of them that are all absolutely critical. We wouldn't consider raising soybeans without doing all of these things. So it's definitely a program that you've got to build. But the three pre's are big. And then you may consider which trait you're going to use for foliar options for killing weeds. Maybe you're going to go Xtend. Maybe you think, hey, I'm going to take a shot with this new Enlist trait that's coming out. Maybe you say, gosh, I'm really happy with my Liberty Link soybeans. Or I've talked to a number of farmers this year. It's not a huge percentage, but I've talked to a number of farmers that say, hey, I can get a premium for non-GMO beans. I'm going to go with the conventional herbicide program. All right, you better plan those things out, figure out what your options are, and get your game plan set, because regardless of which of those options you use, you want to spray early, get weeds when they're small. Otherwise, they really start robbing yield. So those things are big. And then the other two things, Brian, this year that have been really hot topics have been, what planting population should I use? Should I vary that a little bit? And not many farmers that we've talked to have done any research at all on their farms. So I'd say on your farm, if you haven't looked at planting population, you may try that a little bit. And you say, well, I always do 140,000. Maybe try 120,000 on a little bit of your farm and 160 on a little bit of your farm and just see what differences are out there, if there's a yield difference or so forth. And then the other thing is with seeding, singulating soybean seed. That one is really interesting, and it costs you nothing to do research on this on your farm. Just go out and find a plant that was spaced perfectly all by itself, count how many pods are on it, and then go just a few inches down the row until you find one with a double or a triple seed placement, and count all the pods on the two plants that are growing together and see what you get compared to the one by itself. It's interesting. I think you're going to want to singulate seed down the road.
I have a lot of reservations about your cutting population. What I worry about is that guys are going to do it when they maybe shouldn't do it. So let me give you some examples. If you're not using a great seed treatment, don't do it. If you don't have 90-95% germ and 90% cold germ, I wouldn't do it. Also, if you have iron deficiency chlorosis or some soil issues, surface crusting is another thing. So in other words, if you like to work your ground and then roll your beans, I'm not cutting down to 140,000 or down below 140,000. But that's not to say that your theory here can't work in some cases. So it certainly right. can. We don't need to have 140,000 final stand or even 130,000 final stand, obviously.
Well, it's like all these things, Brian. They kind of build on one another. And if you say, well, I'm not going to put any phosphorus or potassium out there, we're going to be extremely deficient.
Yep.
Well, then you're wasting your time doing right. all these other things. And if you say, well, hey, I don't have my drainage problem fixed and my water table is 6 inches below the surface, guess what? You can do all these things. It's not going to matter because you've killed all the good bugs in your soil. Your root system's not going to get deep. You're going to really struggle. So you do have to do a number of different things to be successful.
Absolutely. But yeah, I worry that any of the things that we've mentioned, this is a holistic deal and you've got to look at your situation. So our situation was we had poor drainage in spots. We had low potassium, not low in parts per million, but low in base saturation K. We've had disease issues and bug issues and just, you know, lack of some general fertility things. And we're addressing all those. And when we do address all those, guess what? The yield goes up. It's amazing.
All right. I've got a lot to talk about today. And yeah, many things that you should be doing in your soybean crop if you want to improve your profit this year or keep your costs down. We'll get to those coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence, too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to GrowSmartRewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
Back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Brian and I are back in studio. It kind of feels good being back inside, well, especially because the wind chill is like 50 below zero outside. So that would be one thing, but it's been fun out doing our Ag PhD workshops this winter. If you would like to catch one of those, Just go to agphd.com and click on the events tab. We've got more events coming up here over the next couple of weeks. We'd love to have you there. Now, some of our events, we've kicked off the day by having the Grain PhD folks in to talk a little bit about what's going on. There have been so many questions about the markets this year, and it's been really interesting to watch and really kind of tough to start planning for. So we got Scott Harms on with Grain PhD with us today to help us through some of that. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
All right. So we're trying to get guys fired up about making a marketing plan, yet it's kind of been difficult to do much marketing when these markets seem stuck in such a tight range due to lack of news, and we're waiting for some big news. Like coming up, we've got the USDA just set to release its delayed January production figures. So what are you expecting in that report, and what good news have you got to share with us?
Well, yeah, to say that the market's been stuck in a tight range is, you know, probably an understatement, really. I mean, it's been a tough road to hoe here recently to sit and watch these prices do next to nothing. So I think I saw some numbers today. You know, since January 17th, March corn has closed within a 5-cent range, and since the 23rd of January, beans have closed within a 10-cent range. So they really are going nowhere fast. It's just been a market that's been difficult to get a real opportunity for, you know, to put some real good hedges on. I do expect that to change tomorrow. We're going to get a glut of information. 11 o'clock Central is when it comes out. Market's going to digest that information tomorrow, and then to start, it'll probably set the tone for the next couple of weeks of trade. The domestic balance sheets are going to be updated, given us are finally getting a look at the 2018 final production numbers for corn and beans. They're expecting yields to decline a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised they go a little deeper cut, especially in corn. We're also going to get the winter wheat planting estimates out tomorrow. They're going to be the lowest, and probably the lowest in 125 years. Not a lot of people planting wheat now in the wintertime. So those numbers may provide a little bit of a boost. The global numbers are going to be out, and then the back burner number would be the December 1st stocks numbers. It probably won't have much of an impact unless it's a major change one way or the other. But I've held for a while now that the corn fundamental basis or picture is real strong, and I would expect that I've been expecting to get a boost from this USDA report whenever it was going to be released. So hopefully that will occur and get us some traction and we can move higher. Now, nothing operates in a vacuum, so even though the corn numbers are good, if we have some sluggish bean numbers or wheat numbers, it's going to be really hard for the corn to get and, you know, move higher and hold on to gains. And I also know that there have been, you know, some advisors out there with the same opinion that the corn market has some strong fundamentals to it and really could start to move higher. Well, that means that there's going to be a lot of offers in place above the market, as there should be. People should be ready to take advantage of it. But, you know, that is going to slow the roll a little bit unless we get a combination of good positives and numbers along with a trade deal. You know, at the same time, we're going to run out of momentum and we'll be a little bit sluggish. But we should get a boost, hopefully some higher trade, and hopefully a return to volatility, because volatility does mean opportunity in this market.
Hey, Scott, you know, all the people we've been talking to this winter, one of the biggest things I've gotten for feedback about Grain PhD is guys are just so excited. They can't believe they're getting the GrainBridge software to manage their positions for free. That's been really nice. Then the second comment on that, when I ask guys, okay, tell me about that, and they're like, I couldn't believe it. I got all set up in like 45 minutes, and now I can see exactly where I'm at every day. So now those guys are really hungry to use this software more. So they're looking for getting marketing plans in place. What are some of your thoughts, and do you have any specific trade ideas that you're looking at that you'd say, hey, you're getting into GrainBridge software, here's something you may consider doing?
Yeah, we haven't been doing much in the marketplace here at Grain PhDs, you know, as far as market action. But yeah, we have been working with a lot of people and loading up that data. It's easy to load on your own, but people at the Grain PhD will help in that process as well, getting involved in getting set up on the GrainBridge software. You know, I sound a little bit like a broken record, you know, in that we're just not doing anything right now. We're not encouraging people to make any sales at these levels, but we are going to be taking advantage of a rally. We do have a couple option ideas we sent out this week in the corn and beans. In the corn, we're looking to set a price floor, both and same beans, the same thing. We're looking at buying the December $4 puts and selling the $4.40 calls, And we'd like to do this at even monies, meaning that the puts are going to cost you the same that you receive for the calls. So you're going to sell the calls, and that'll help finance the puts, and you pay even money. It is going to take about a 15-cent rally, so probably December corn in the 415 to 417 area, and that would give you a price floor at $4 through late November. You would have to finance or manage the 440 calls with, because they will have a margin tied to it. But that's our strategy to get rolling here for our next sale, and we'll work these orders. I'll probably have them in place until March 10th, early March. And if we haven't gotten filled by then on that increment, we'll probably get a little more aggressive and move things around a little bit. But I fully expect that they would get triggered.
How about on soybeans, Scott? What's your idea for soybeans?
It's pretty much something similar. Setting that price floor by buying puts and selling calls. We're buying the 960 puts, selling the 1060 calls. That would cost you 10 cents if we were to get that in place at where we want to get it done. And it would take about a 30-cent rally. So November futures around 990, just short of shy of $10. And that would give you a price floor because you paid 10 cents for the entire strategy. And so it would give you a price floor of 950. And that would coverage would be through late October. You're still going to market along as you go, but these are... There, you're still, by selling the calls out of the money, you have room for the market to work on the upside, but you've set that price floor in case it just continues to go down. So you're still going to make incremental sales and keep your cash program going as needed following your basis. But this would be an insurance policy to a degree. And, I say a 30-cent rally in beans. It's probably hard today to argue for a 30-cent rally in beans, but we don't know what's coming, and I think we've got time here to be a little patient and see if something lights the fire in the bean market or another market that drags that bean market higher. And so we're going to be patient, try to wait for that 30-cent rally. And the same thing with corn. If we don't get something done by early March, we want to get some additional sales on prior to the spring before we move into the planting intentions at the end of March. So by early March, if we haven't gotten something in place, we'll get a little more aggressive.
We get a lot of questions around the options, and it's certainly not a one-size-fits-all situation. So how do you handle those discussions?
Yeah, that's where the Grain PhD individual consult could come in. Everyone has a different risk tolerance when it comes to marketing in general, but also, especially with options. Sometimes people don't have a full understanding of or need a little guidance there. So some people just don't want to sell options because you do have to finance that call in case the market goes up. Some people just want to buy options and pay that money up front, not have to worry about that margin risk. So for those people, we would maybe raise our targets a little bit to try to get that put option without the money you have to outlay, to get that a little bit cheaper. And then we'd skip entirely the portion of the strategy where you sell the call option. And some people just want to buy deep out of the money call options to keep their costs low. It's like what we face now with kind of healthcare costs, and we raise our deductible on our health insurance to keep our costs lower on the upfront, but our coverage is going to be less, and
sure,
it wouldn't kick in unless there's a catastrophic event. So you can do the same thing with grain options. You buy deep out of the money options. It's not going to provide you a lot of initial coverage if the market goes down a little bit, but if there is a major move to the downside, you've kept your cost lower up front, you'll have some coverage on in case something goes crazy to the downside.
Scott, that's something that we hear about though this year, guys saying, I just got to do something very inexpensive because of the situation they're in for this year. There's so many strategies like that you can do. That's why we encourage you, check out grainphd.com. Get some information for free. If you want to talk to somebody, you can talk to an expert there as well. Scott Harms, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Have a great day. Stay warm.
You too. We'll be right back after this. When looking for someone to help with your risk management, a key component to look for is patience. Patience to bring you along in the process at your own speed. Patience to learn about your operation. And patience to not only discuss what strategies may be effective for your plan, but why they would be effective. That's the strength of Grain PhD. I'm Darren Hefty. When you're ready to become more engaged in your risk management, Grain PhD can assist you with that process. Visit grainphd.com to learn more.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstous.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about soybeans. What are some things you should be doing in your soybeans to increase yield and increase your profitability? Obviously, this year, we're looking for all those reasons, or all those things that we could do to try to make a profit and give us more reasons to plant soybeans. Because as Brandon mentioned earlier, there are some guys that are going to shift some acres, no doubt about it, this year. Let's go a little north of the border here. We got Mike Verndonk with us. Mike, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, yourself?
Good, good. All right. Talk to me about soybeans. I want to know all your secrets, Mike.
Well, secrets, I think we can talk about soybeans for a long time, because soybeans is a special kind of plant. Sometimes a nice soybean field, you can really be disappointed, even if it looks very nice. But what I can say from my experience is that, first of all, you got to take care of the basics. And the basics is probably compaction, which is the, in my case, I got heavy clay. I'm in the northern part of the North America. So you got to take care of that. Take care of if you got releveling to do or drainage, you got to take care of those basics first. I think that's the main thing before all those variable rates, all those foliars, all those extra money you put in. Those basics need to be taken care of. And secondly, I think it's probably biodiversity. We need to rebuild our soils. Let microorganisms rebuild their habitat. And that's why I use more and more cover crops. Of course, that's the new thing. And I think it's not a trend. It's really where we're going. And soybeans long term will benefit from that. And the third thing that I think is the right tool. We use a lot of strip till. Why? because we got heavy clay. We want to warm up that berm, rebuild fertility with the strip till if necessary. We use a Soil Warrior. It's a really excellent machine. We even seeded soybeans with the Soil Warrior when we really got to go. We need to do a lot of acres in a long, short period of time. But still, I think the right tool is the third thing that's important for soybeans. From then on, I think that we can discuss a lot in detail from all those 3 points, but that's where I think I'm going.
No, I agree with you, Mike. I think it starts from the soil up, and you talked about compaction. Brandon and I talked a little about drainage to start off the show, and compaction is one of those things, too. If you have poor drainage, you're going to have even more problems with compaction, and if we don't fix that, we end up with all kinds of problems that, you're right, no foliar or fertilizer or anything else is going to fix that. It's just going to be a problem forever. So when you're doing the strip till, how do you like to do it? Are you using coulters to put fertilizer out? Do you use a knife to go deep with fertilizer? What's been your preference?
Well, actually, we got heavy clay, so we don't like knives. It's smears, so we're kind of using the coulter system. That's why we went to the Soil Warrior. It's a coulter system. We put the fertilizer, let's say, depending on, if we strip in the fall, we'll go deeper. We'll put like a P and K if necessary in the fall. Maybe 6 inches deep, 5 or 6 inches deep. That's the maximum we'll go. By doing a strip till using cover crops, you got your track. So you're not driving where you're going to be planting. You're kind of committed to a track when you strip till. So that's part of the system itself. So no, when we use our fertility, it's mostly in the fall, and in the spring we want to be efficient. So P&K is dry in the fall.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mike. We do a lot of the same things with the strip till. Get it done in the fall. That way in the spring we could be really efficient with our time. We've already got our berm built. We've got fertility out there. All we need to do is plant, and that's really allowed us to get the planting done quicker, which has improved yields. Planting early, that's another thing that's been a nice thing for improving soybean yields.
Yeah, and when we work a lot with cover crops, we are rebuilding carbon in our soil, and the strip till is kind of a carbon borrower. Always, you hear a lot of guys, you're not supposed to work the soil, but the strip till for me is just like I borrow a bit of carbon from what I put into my soil and my cover crops, and then that really helps the plant. It just loosens up everything and liberates a bit of a nutrients that was built up from the cover crops. So soybeans, it's a long term thing because microorganisms, when you give them the chance to rebuild their habitat, that's what they're going to concentrate on for a couple of years until you really build your soil. From then on, your soybeans are really going to be, you're going to have it up now. You're going to get, like, the return on investment might take a few years at the beginning.
Mike, I think you framed our discussion for today's show very well. I really appreciate having you on. Mike farms up kind of up near Montreal. And when we start with a soil-first approach, we just set ourselves up for so much success. Mike, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. We'll have to talk to you again sometime.
Pleasure.
Let's head down to North Carolina. We've got Kevin Matthews with us. And Kevin's one of those guys that's been beating up on Brian and me a little bit up at our field day and some of our first step plots. Kevin, how's it going today?
Oh, beautiful. 77, 78 degrees, sunny. Loving it.
Yeah, that's not bad. We're at 0 degrees right now with a 25 below wind chill. So a little bit different, you know, about 100 degree different real feel kind of thing. So you're out in fields, and I know you guys had a lot of work to do after the storms and the flooding and all the things that you had for last year. What are you doing in these soybean fields? Because I know you strive for some really high soybean yields. What do you got to do to get things built back up?
Well, the fertility, and that's what we're actually doing today, spreading poultry litter and getting ready so we can get the high nutrient levels up front prior to planting, so they'll be there for that plant when it goes to take off and try to meet all its needs it may have to stay in those high yield areas.
You know, we were just talking earlier this week with Rob Dedman, and he uses a lot of poultry litter as well. And Rob said the thing about poultry litter that a lot of guys don't understand is about half of that nitrogen probably isn't going to be immediately available. And that's just fine with soybeans. We need a lot of that nitrogen to come up late. How do you figure that? Is that the only nitrogen you're going to be putting on your high yielding beans? Oh, did I lose you there, Kevin? Well, I think I did. We'll have to see if we can catch Kevin back. He's out spreading manure today, Brian.
He probably just got tired of talking to you, dear.
Well, he's got better things to do. He's obviously a busy guy.
All right. So anyway, just some more thoughts on the whole soybean thing. I do think that there are – I was just talking to a few people this morning, and I said, you know, when you look at – a lot of different crops out there. I think soybeans have just tremendous opportunity for upside. There are a lot more things that could be done by the average grower that aren't being done. So I love talking about soybeans because there are just so many different things. So Kevin, how about you? Thanks. I think we got Kevin back on the line here.
Yes, I'm back.
Yeah, we talk about a lot of these just different things that a farmer could do. So like in your area, what are people not doing that you say, boy, I think guys should be doing this because it's working for me on my farm in soybeans?
Well, I don't think it's just our area. I think it's just the soybean crop in general. So many people treat it as a soybean crop, and they focus so much detail to their corn, and if they take that type of approach and apply it to the soybean crop, it can be quite rewarding. You got to be willing to make some changes, and, you know, for our area, one of the things that doesn't cost anything is manage maturity and plant date around summer solstice to obtain maximum yield. And, you know, when you don't spend no extra money and pick up 20 bushels, that's real profit.
So what do you mean specifically by that? What date are you trying to plant your beans, let's just say, in North Carolina?
Well, traditionally, soybeans in this area of the state would be planted in very late May, early June, and then the double crops would come in behind wheat.
Yep.
In latter June. But on our full season beans, which would normally have the May, June plant date, now we're planting the 1st of April. We won't be done by the 15th to 20th of May, but we're starting out with a 4.9 indeterminate in early April. And then as we approach May, we start going towards a 4.5, 4.2. Get towards May 15th, we're wanting to be in a 3.5, 3.6. And which is a lot of the opposite. People want to plant early. They want to plant the earlier maturity groups, but then they're missing the nick around the flowering, setting those fruiting nodes and trying to obtain the maximum pod set with the longest day of the year, summer solstice, on June 21st.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you 100% on that. Early planting is paying here in South Dakota as well, we are finding. Hey, Kevin, would you mind holding on for us through the break? We got a couple more questions for you.
You'll be fine, yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply Endoprime SC. MycoApply Endoprime SC uses four specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply Endoprime SC at endoprimecorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
A pasture should have two things, grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit noweedsnobrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today, talking about things you should be doing in your soybeans. And that's a tough thing because we're talking to farmers all around the country. In fact, we're talking to one right now, Kevin Matthews out of North Carolina. Kevin, things are a little different where you farm versus where we are in the West. A little more disease pressure. You got some more challenges that come with it. How do you handle that on your farm?
Well, we got to be proactive. You don't want to be reactive. A fungicide is not a question of if, it's a question of when you're going to apply it. So we try to get out there early. We'll be there at R1, R2 lots of times, come back with a R4, even sometimes a R5 application. It just about needs to be budgeted two applications. For just normal crop production, if you're getting some real high-yield stuff and you're in that 100 bushel north range, you're probably going to be looking at three fungicide applications.
Yeah, it's relentless. I got a chance to visit your farm this summer, and it's not easy. People think, oh, yeah, if I just farm there, I could get more yield. But there's a lot of tough things that come with farming in North Carolina and in an environment where disease is going to be that rampant. You know, we talked on the fertility thing a little bit, and you said you're building up soils with the manure to start with. Are you also using your 2x2 program like you do in corn?
Absolutely, yes. Soybeans are a root feeding crop. It does its best a job putting nutrients in through its roots. Foliar is a band-aid, so to speak. We really like putting the right product at the right placement at planting. So we are on both sides of the row, 2 inches off, 2 inches down. And we only use orthophosphate there because we're so close to that root zone. We don't want any salts that might cause injury to that root zone. And it's just phenomenal, the yield response that we've seen using that program.
So, Kevin, any last things that we haven't mentioned today that you wanted to talk about today?
Oh, shucks. I don't know. You guys do such a great job. We talk often. You always enjoy making high yields, but it's all about high profitability. So the highest yield may not be the most profitable. So I would encourage everyone to have some, 10, 20 acres devoted on their farm and do some test plots, play with it. Expect to lose a little money on some things and figure out what will work and won't work to take across your whole farming operation to have a good netting ROI.
Yep, I think that's great advice. You can read all kinds of stuff out there. You can look at everybody else's plots, but until you try stuff on your own farm, it's hard to know how it's going to work in your situation. So, yep, we do the same thing, exactly what you're talking about there, Kevin. Well, again, we've been talking to Kevin Matthews. He is a farmer out in North Carolina. He's going to be back at our Ag PhD Field Day again this summer if you want to visit with Kevin yourself. Kevin, thanks a lot for the time today. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you guys for all you do for agriculture.
You bet. Thank you. All right, well, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Aaron.
All right, got a question from a farmer named Brian who farms in Ontario, and he said, thanks for your show. We are traditionally running around 200 bushels of corn here in Ontario, and my question for you is about boron. We've got mostly flat clay soils that are tiled at 25-foot spacings. The soil test levels are medium to high on all nutrients except for boron. 4 years ago, we started splitting our nitrogen application based on the CEC of our soils. And looking at your Ag PhD nutrient removal app, it says we're removing about a half a pound of boron per year with our 200 bushel corn. Now, we're always adding a quarter of a pound in the starter, and I'm not sure of the purity. My question to you is, what would be the best way to apply more boron? Put some in our spring broadcast, put some in our dry nitrogen side dress, or both or other ways?
Well, just like Kevin Matthews was just talking about there, we would encourage you try some different things out on your farm. But yes, you're right. A 200 bushel corn crop, just with the grain removal only, is going to take away about a half a pound of boron every year. So you will absolutely want to do something. And we do find chronically low boron levels in a lot of areas around the world. So we absolutely believe it's something that you should be addressing. Now, what we're doing in our farm, we're putting on a bunch of dry boron to try to raise the soil levels. We'll still do a little foliar feeding and, you know, maybe a little side dress or something like that. But where we're so terribly low, we're trying to build that overall soil profile, and dry is just way cheaper to do that in order to put pounds out there. You have to be careful, though, when you're putting pounds out about the toxicity of it, so that's why we're broadcasting that. Boron does move fairly well in the soil, so we don't have to worry too much that it's not going to get to the plant or the plant's not going to find the boron after we broadcast it. But anyway, I would just say try some things out, number one. Number two, if you want to build soil levels, try some dry. And then other than that, yeah, we've done everything from throw boron with the herbicide before crop emergence to throwing little bits with every foliar application we're making. We've done some side dress of it. Lots of different ways you can get it out there. The key thing is you need boron a lot of times at the peak where your plants start flowering. So like in corn, we talk about around tassel time, that's where you need to have really good boron availability. So just make sure you've got that available at least by mid-season.
All right, got a couple of soil tests. This is from Cliff in North Dakota. And he said, I'm really fighting some tough situations here where I've got high levels of soluble salts and quite a bit of sodium in my soil. And I'm wondering what would be the best way to get started. We've started on some drainage tile projects on the farm. What would you do after that?
Okay, yesterday, it was yesterday. I was in Canada and I was doing an IPHC soils clinic. We talked a little about drain tile, and we talked specifically about sodium. And I'm looking at his two tests that he sent in here. One is 18.3% sodium. That's basically dead ground. That didn't happen overnight. And this is why we talk so much about learning how to read your own soil tests, pulling regular soil tests, and getting all the things rather than just N, P, and K. Because if you weren't testing for sodium in the past, you might not have known this was happening. But I was talking to one farmer yesterday who had 2 or 2.5% sodium. Okay, at that point, we can manage it. We it's not a complete loss, and we're going to get it back to being great. It's already probably still good, but we're going to get it back to being great pretty quickly. Now, how long is it going to take to get 18% sodium to be great? Oh, boy. That could take quite a while. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is getting great drainage out there. Beyond that, then, yes, we absolutely do want to see complete soil tests. I'd like to know how many total pounds of sulfur we've got, for example. If we've got crazy high levels of sulfur, it's possible that just fixing the drainage will totally fix our sodium issue, because the sulfur is going to combine with sodium to form sodium sulfate, which is leachable. So as long as we have that good drainage, then we're in pretty good shape. Beyond that, you know, I just looking at his soil test here, he's at 1.7% base saturation K. That obviously needs to go up. He's at 35% magnesium. That's part of the reason why the drainage is so poor, because the ground is tight. He's got a 69 CEC. Now, it might not truly be 69 CEC, but it's driven up because that sodium is going to bind things together. The magnesium is going to bind things together. So, yeah, he's definitely got some challenges ahead of him here. I'm going to be looking at elemental sulfur. I'm going to be looking at gypsum. These are the types of products that we're going to use once we get the drainage taken care of.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Got a weed control question.
Hey, wait a second. Sorry. I should have included this before. Also, when we've got these high pH issues, high sodium issues, if we are able to raise something for a crop out there, first of all, you got to pick a crop that's tolerant. But secondly, you do want to try to get some nutrients in balance and do some banding. But, I mean, he's got 8 parts per million of phosphorus. So, you know, on one test and 12 on another. And the low potassium. I mean, there are other things that need to be addressed besides just the drainage and trying to work on that sodium.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Really appreciate that, Cliff. Thanks for sending in those soil tests. If you've got soil tests you want us to take a look at just to get a different opinion or get a new idea on something that you're working on your farm, you can sure send them to us, radio@agphd.com, along with any agronomic questions that you've got. We're also taking your calls on this show at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll get to some more of the Ag PhD mailbag questions coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With 2 effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Ideal for herbicide applications, the Ultra Low Drifts Large Air Inducted Droplets were designed to eliminate driftable fines without sacrificing coverage. Its thick three-dimensional pattern creates multiple angles for the spray to cover the target. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on 4 fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
When you build with Morton Buildings, you build something that lasts. And now you can build for less during Building Value Days. If you're dreaming of a personal storage building, horse barn, farm storage, home, office, insulated workshop, or even a commercial facility, take advantage of our discounted pricing on new buildings now through February 28, 2019. So don't delay. Visit MortonBuildings.com for more information.
Are you frustrated with white mold showing up year after year in your soybeans? If you have tried fungicide applications and are still losing yield to white mold, now is the time to ask your seed dealer about Heads Up Plant Protectant. Heads Up is the first EPA-registered seed treatment for the prevention of white mold in soybeans and pulse crops. The first line of defense on your farm against white mold now starts with the right seed treatment package. Locate a Heads Up dealer near you by visiting headsupst.com today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're answering your calls and agronomic questions throughout the rest of the show at 844 44AgPhD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Got an email from John down in Kansas about fertility in wheat. He said, this year was the wettest that we've ever seen in our farm, and the fall was no different, so we drilled a field that we were planning just to use as a wheat cover crop and terminated in the spring. However, we did get a bunch of rain. Now the wheat looks like it could be great, so we want to keep it as a wheat crop. We just need to get more nitrogen out there. So I'm curious, how much nitrogen can we apply over the top of our wheat without worrying about crop damage? We were wanting to make two applications, most likely with a spray rig, as we don't have the tool to side dress at this time. With one application, having a...
Side dress?
He said side dress wheat? He said okay. Side dress, but maybe right. He meant stream bark.
Yeah.
With one application, they're also going to throw in some Finesse and some Top Guard fungicide. And they're wanting to use about 100 total pounds of nitrogen.
Okay, so here's my concern. If, let's say, it's liquid, then you're talking 30, 35 gallons of liquid 28%, just for example. To make it safe, usually we're talking one-to-one with water. So it would take a lot of water to go with it. Many times what we're going to recommend instead is just going out with stream bars. So the stream bars are not very expensive. That's what I would do. I'd invest the money in the stream bars and stream it on. Because even if you go, I mean, let's say you're going to two shots of, let's even just call it 15 gallons. You're going to go 15 gallons of liquid 28 and 15 gallons of water. It's probably going to be safe, but even there, it's a lot that you're throwing onto that plant. So I'm not super comfortable with it. I'd really love to see a stream bar. That's how I would do it. Now, you mentioned herbicide. If you're going to go out there with Finesse and you're going to go out there with Top Guard, well, now we're talking whole different applications. We don't want to see, you know, a whole bunch of fertilizer with that and water. You're going to either water it down too much, or what most likely is going to happen is you're going to add leaf burn, because now you've got herbicide and fungicide that each have their different oils in there. Well, especially the fungicide. But I mean, you can add some more burn. So I hate to say this, but you're almost stuck to three applications. Or you do one big application with the stream bars, putting 30, 35 gallons of nitrogen on, or 30, 35 gallons of 28% on with the stream bars, and then go spray separately with that herbicide, fungicide thing either before or after.
Yeah, it's a tough deal when you get a lot of stuff to get done. I agree with yep. Brian. I don't like the foliar application of the nitrogen as much as I like the stream bars. We've had better luck with that, less injury to the crop, and that's almost always a good thing. Brian had a weed control question. How do you control Pimpinella is a question Dan sent in.
Yeah, so there are a bunch of different, I'm not going to use the word right, but species. There are a bunch of different types of Pimpinella. Anyway, I just say this. If you're talking about some type of wildflower out there, you got a perennial, most likely. So I don't care if we're just talking this or something else that's a wildflower. It's almost always some perennial. Is it going to be super easy to control? No. You're going to probably have to run high rates of Distinct or 2,4-D or dicamba. Otherwise, if it's in an area where you can use glyphosate, that's what I'm going to use. I'm going to use a full labeled rate of glyphosate, and generally speaking, that's going to work fairly well.
All right. Thanks for the question, Dan. I got one from Kaylee over in Minnesota. He said, I'm in southern Minnesota, and I've got a question. I'm thinking about seeding wheat and alfalfa at the same time, chopping the wheat for silage for my dairy heifers instead of using it for grain or straw. Do you have any insight on that? In the past, I've had weed control issues out there.
Yep. Yep.
Should I do this? When would I chop? And do you think it's a bad idea?
I hate to tell people that I don't like their idea. But
oh, you tell me that all the time, Brian.
Well, yeah, but you're not most people. Anyway, we get this same exact type of question about once a month here at Ag PhD, where somebody wants to put a grass crop together with a broadleaf crop. I'll say the same thing I always do. I believe you're going to raise more alfalfa and more wheat in total if you just raise them separate. So I take half the ground and raise the wheat and half the ground and raise the alfalfa and go from there. And you'll do a lot better job because now you can properly fertilize, you can properly seed, you can properly spray. lots of advantages. When you put wheat together with alfalfa, you have one product you can use for control, and that's Buctrol. And Buctrol is not very good on the pigweed species. It's not very good on a lot of weeds. It does have some broadleaf control, but that's really it. You don't have any grass killers. I mean, there's nothing that's labeled other than Buctrol that I know of. I mean, maybe I'm missing something, but I think that's about it. So that's my biggest concern is, just like he mentioned, is weeds. That's my, I agree. That's my biggest concern too. But also, you take a look at the fertility side, okay? So wheat, we need nitrogen. Alfalfa, probably don't need to apply a whole bunch of nitrogen. You know, they're different crops where, well, there are just so many differences. I could go on for the rest of the show talking about the differences. I wouldn't do it. If you want to do it, I mean, that's totally your call. You certainly can, but I've got a lot of reservations about it. I absolutely think you'd do better splitting the field, putting the alfalfa in one half, the wheat on the other.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate the question. Next one comes from Josh, and he said, I was looking at some grain tickets and realized our test weight for soybeans was only around 56 pounds per bushel, and we were at about 12.5% moisture at harvest. Mm-hmm. When I looked at the weight of the grain delivered and divided by the bushels they paid us for, well, they used a factor of 60. I'm wondering, why do they use the factor of 60 instead of what the actual test weight of the grain is, 56?
That's just the standard and the way that grain is purchased. So if you can talk your grain elevator into going with your test weight instead of the standard 60 pounds, good luck with that. I would tell you, though, if you can get higher test weight beans, just like if you can get higher test weight corn or wheat or anything else, you're going to win because they're still going to figure that same standard number. The number for soybeans is 60. The number for corn is 56, for example. So that's what you're looking at. That's the standard, and everything is purchased by weight. And I understand why they want to purchase it by weight, because it's way simpler. That's what's done. So how are you going to increase that test weight in your soybeans? Fertility is one of the biggest things that we talk about all the time, and it's not just N, P, and K. Now, potassium's huge, okay? So I'd really focus on that. You've got to be in that 4 to 8% range on base saturation K. If you're not, that's the first money I'd spend on your farm. Beyond that, take a look at some of the micronutrients and then just some of your other practices in raising soybeans. Generally speaking, if we can increase that test weight, though, that is a pretty nice thing, as you have figured out.
All right. Thanks for the question. I appreciate that, Josh. I got one from Gary in Kentucky. He said, I'm farming in western Kentucky, and many field borders are composed of large trees, which definitely reduce any crop yields planted next to them. I was thinking this might make a good topic for your show of what do you do along those tree lines?
You take them out of production. I just had an email maybe 2-3 weeks ago from a guy who finally started on his farm to look at profit maps in grids or zones. I don't remember which it was, grids or zones. But anyway, his whole point was he had acres where he was continuing to spend lots of money every year to put the crop in, and he wasn't getting nearly as much back. So in other words, he was losing money on acres. And he just said, why am I doing that? I remember specifically one of the things he talked about was right along trees. He said, I got a shelter belt, and right there, I'm not making any money, never have. So I'm just putting it to grass. And at least I can get a couple of bales off there. That's better than nothing. So, you know, next to trees, there are a lot of people out there that talk about all these benefits to trees. And there certainly are some. I'm not saying don't put trees in, but I'm just saying for almost everything, there aren't just benefits, there are also drawbacks, and that's one of the biggest drawbacks is you can shade out your crop.
You know, I just came back from New Zealand, Brian. I was down there a little over a month ago, and they had a lot of big hedgerows along the end of the fields. They'd have some really big trees in rows along the edges, and in many of those situations, they had field crops. I get it that at one point there was a lot of pasture, and whether it was sheep or dairy cattle or whatnot, and I understand the protection for the animals and those kinds of things. But when it comes to the row crops, there's no question that you're losing lots of yield there. One thing that a farmer had told me not too many years ago, he said, yeah, you know what I've figured out really works there. And I said, what works? He goes, well, I had to put in a tile line. And so I had my tile plow down about 4 feet deep, and I realized I'm chopping off a lot of those roots that are sticking way out into my field. Now he plans every third year to run the tile plow without even putting any tile in the ground, just to chop off some of those roots that go way out into his field to limit that.
Yeah, he's talking about the roots, though, that are going to pull water and nutrients away rather than the shade, which is kind of what I was getting at. But yeah, both of them are concerning.
All right, well, thanks for the question. And thanks to everyone who sent in questions today. We really appreciate that. And thanks for listening to our show. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.